For many people, there's one absolute in the wake of the devastation brought last year by Hurricane Katrina. New Orleans must be rebuilt. But if that's going to happen, there'll have to be some new mechanisms to protect the city from future hurricanes. A report out this week on the future of coastal Louisiana offers a different take on hurricane protection. It's not enough to build bigger and better levees while ignoring the coastal landscape. In the report's view, restoring wetlands and barrier islands is as important as any engineering solution. But doing this means rethinking the management of water resources in the Gulf region. What will it take to make the change? This hour, we'll talk about why engineering alone won't provide a big fix for the Big Easy. If you'd like to join our discussion, give us a call. Our number is 1-800-989-8255. That's 1-800-989-TALK. And if you want more information about what we'll be talking about this hour, go to our website. That's www.sciencefriday.com, where you'll find links to our topic. Now let me introduce my guests. Meade Allison is an associate professor in the Department of Earth and Environmental Sciences at Tulane University in New Orleans, Louisiana. He joins me today from his office there. Welcome to the program, Dr. Allison.
Thank you, Mr. Palka. It's good to be here.
And Jerry Galloway is the Glenn L. Martin Institute Professor of Engineering at the University of Maryland in College Park. He was the moderator of the 2004 American Society of Civil Engineers Symposium on Coastal Louisiana, and he's a member of the Mississippi River Commission, and he's a retired Brigadier General in the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Dr. Galloway joins me today from Middletown, Virginia. Welcome to the program, Dr. Galloway.
Good afternoon. A pleasure to be with you.
And my third guest this hour is Donald Bosch. He's a professor of marine science at the University of Maryland and president of the University of Maryland Center for Environmental Sciences in Cambridge, Maryland. And he's in California today, so he joins me from Santa Barbara. Welcome back to the program, Dr. Bosch.
It's very good to be back on the program, Joe.
Great. Well, glad to have you again. And I'd like to start with you since you were one of the authors of this report that's just come out. What are we talking about when we're talking about the importance of wetlands? Why? I mean, I don't think people really make that connection about how a wetlands is going to help ameliorate the effect of a hurricane.
Well, it's just a simple matter of whether a city that's fortified by levees is going to be directly exposed to the Gulf of Mexico and therefore all of the power of storms that hurricanes that hit the Gulf, or whether it's going to have an expansive landscape, which in Louisiana and the Delta is mostly wetlands, that's going to buffer the storm surge, slow it down, reduce its height, such that the levees don't have to be so massive and are less likely to be defeated or overtopped.
And I mean, what are the issues in terms of maintaining wetlands? Is that just a scientific issue where a scientist goes out and says, okay, that's wetlands, we have to restore it, or is there more to it than that?
No, well, the problem, of course, in the coastal Louisiana is that during the 20th century, we've lost a tremendous area of wetlands. That reversed a 5,000-year trend of growth of the Mississippi Delta in the coastal area. And because of a variety of human activities that levied the river, cutting off the sediment supply that nourishes the wetlands, canals for navigation, oil and gas extraction, we've caused the system to be in dysfunction so that there's a very rapid loss of wetlands. And so it's not only a question of maintaining, of trying to rebuild areas, but it's a question if we don't do something soon, the wetlands that remain as this protective buffer will be increasingly lost.
Okay, well, we'll be talking more about that in the hour, I'm sure, but I'd like now to turn to Meade Allison, who's at Tulane University in New Orleans, and Tulane only recently opened for business again. How are things? I guess that's the first question.
Well, things in New Orleans are very different from things at Tulane, I guess. The situation at Tulane is very positive right now. We're about 10 days into a normal spring semester. The university's done a wonderful job of repairing any damage. Basically, we sit We have a long, narrow campus that sits astride the boundary of areas that were dry and areas were flooded. So part of the campus experienced very little damage, and part of the campus had a significant amount of water damage. But as I say, they've done a great job of getting it back together, and we have virtually all of our students have returned, and so things are very optimistic. And in the areas that are very dry, things are returning to a sense of normalcy, but that represents about 20% of the city's area, and if you leave that sort of shelter of sanity, things still look pretty devastated and haven't improved significantly since the hurricane.
Maybe you could remind us why New Orleans was particularly vulnerable to a hurricane strike, because there's other cities that have been hit by hurricanes but without causing, 300,000 displaced people.
Well, there of course many coastal cities are vulnerable to hurricanes, so of course our proximity to the Gulf is one of the factors, but New Orleans has this special factor in that a significant portion of the city is below sea level, as much in some areas as about 12 feet below sea level.
Wow. So I guess it's been the job of the levees to protect to keep the water inside the channels that it's supposed to go in, and of course those failed, and that's part of the reason the city flooded. So maybe I can turn to Jerry Galloway and ask, can you bring us up to date on why these levees failed?
Well, I think the answer to that is yet to be known. We recognize that there were two failures of the levees in the canal section. Everybody has seen these canals coming in off Lake Pontchartrain to the heart of New Orleans. And when the flood walls on those canals failed, that caused a major part of the flooding. And then there was a third failure in an area along the Industrial Canal that flooded the lower Ninth Ward that we've seen so many pictures of. But there were a number of places, 40, 50 places throughout the New Orleans metropolitan area where the levees were overtopped by the very size of the storm surge that we've been talking about. The fact that this wall of water came across the wetlands and up the channels and in through Lake Pontchartrain and, in fact, came to a height that overtopped the levees then eroded and began to be compromised. And so we ended up with a lot of places in the city where the levee was badly damaged. Since the flood, the Corps of Engineers has been hard at work to try and put them back into a better shape to restore them to the elevation that they were supposed to be in when the hurricane hit, and to do this by June of next year.
So I'm wondering, I'm testing my memory here, but so I may be misquoting you slightly, but you can correct me. It seems to me I read a quote somewhere where you were quoted as saying that there are only two kinds of levees in the world, those that have been overtopped and those that are going to be overtopped. But I took that to mean that, the levee is not a perfect system. So, how far can you really go to protect a city with levees?
You can do your best to protect a city from levees. With levees. Levees work very well when they're properly constructed and when the threat is continuously analyzed so that you know the changes that are taking place. And Don Bosch has already pointed out that we've been losing wetlands over the years. When the Bienville first came to New Orleans, there was a large expanse of wetlands south of New Orleans, and those gave tremendous buffering to the people in New Orleans and protected them. When the hurricanes hit, the levees they had were adequate in most cases to take care of the problem. And so levees work when you carefully watch what they do. And it's interesting to note that a professor at LSU just reported that the Mississippi River levees, which have been in place for a couple of hundred years, but really in a strengthened form since the Great Flood of 1927, have done reasonably well. They're strong. Certainly, when a massive flood were to come, it's possible that they could overtop. And I think that's the lesson to be learned from all of this. If you live behind a levee, there is a residual risk in that particular area in the city against which you must be prepared.
All right. Well, I'd like to invite our listeners to join this conversation. Remember, the number is 800-989-8255. And why don't we go to, Peter in Kansas City. Peter, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you.
What's your question?
Mike, I appreciate being on the program. My question is, I read a long time ago that New Orleans is actually the river, Mississippi River, is being diverted from its natural course, that it actually wants to go further south and southwest of New Orleans. So it seems to me if the country as a whole is going to be rebuilding New Orleans, perhaps we should build it where it really should be and then keep Old Orleans as a cultural center and as a commercial center.
Well, interesting. Peter, I don't know. Donald Bush, is that a question you feel you could address?
Yes, I think I could, and I'd like to suggest that Mead Allison, who's our river expert, can amend what I say.
Okay.
There are some folks who have recently written about this suggestion, and the basic fact is that the Atchafalaya River now receives about 30% of the flow of the Mississippi, and that's regulated by structures that are maintained by the Corps of Engineers. And over the 20th century, it was seen that the likelihood is that the Atchafalaya will capture more and more of the flow of the Mississippi, and then ultimately capture most of the flow of the Mississippi through natural processes. And so we've intervened to keep that from happening to a certain extent. There's been a lot of debate about whether we should just let it go or not. Of course, there's some major problems with letting it take that shorter route. One is that we have a tremendous population base and infrastructure which depends on that river, and it's not only New Orleans, it's well up to Baton Rouge and then above, a large amount of industrial capacity and the like. That would be not on the river, which it depends, but on a bayou of brackish water.
Mm-hmm.
Second problem is that there's some real, although the idea sounds great in concept, it would be very impractical to build a major city in a newly grading, creating delta, because we'd probably end up causing the same problems that we've caused over the long run in coastal Louisiana. Maybe Mead can tell us a little bit.
Well, Mead, Donald Bush, thank you for that. And Mead Allison, I'm going to ask you to hold your thoughts on that because we have to take a short break, but we will be coming back. So stay with us. We're talking about the rebuilding of New Orleans. From NPR News, this is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Joe Palca. We're talking this hour about rebuilding New Orleans. My guests are Donald Bush, professor of marine science at the University of Maryland and president of the University of Maryland Center for Environmental Science in Cambridge, Maryland, Jerry Galloway, the Glenn L. Martin Institute professor of engineering at the University of Maryland in College Park, and he's a retired brigadier general in the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, and Mead Allison, associate professor in the Department of Earth and Environmental Sciences at Tulane University in New Orleans. And we were just dealing with a question about whether or not New Orleans is in the place it ought to be because the Mississippi River wants to go in a slightly different direction. And Mead Allison, I wonder if you can talk about this idea of letting the river take its course, essentially.
Well, I think Don has framed the argument pretty well. I would only add that that it is more than New Orleans, as Don said. It is the infrastructure that exists in the entire New Orleans to Baton Rouge corridor, and the navigation issues of maintaining all that infrastructure and all that port activity in that region. Another possibility that's worth bringing in at this time that's been discussed in many of these recent reports is rather than going through the difficulty and expense of re-engineering to allow the system to flow into the Atchafalaya, to actually open outlets in the levee system below the city of New Orleans, which allows you to maintain activity above river in that very critical zone that is the New Orleans to Baton Rouge corridor.
Okay. Peter, thank you very much for that interesting question.
Could I jump in, Joe, and just make a comment that I think it's interesting that most people in this country don't recognize that the nation's largest port is southern Louisiana, and the impact of any operation that would cause that port to go out of business would have severe economic consequences in the country as well as the southern part of the United States. And that's why, as we look at the issue of flood control, it's not just flood control, it's not just environmental restoration, it's navigation, water supply, putting those all together and looking at them as a whole.
I see. But this raises the interesting question. I mean, you can argue about the scientific merits of one plan or another, but if the politicians say uh-uh, or the residents say uh-uh, what do you do in that situation, Jerry Galloway?
Well, I think that's the job of the three of us on this phone call with you, is to provide the science, to provide the information that convinces decision makers that they must look at this issue holistically, that the idea of just putting up levees and restoring the levees, or just dealing with coastal restoration, or just dealing with navigation, is wrongheaded. That the way to solve the problem is to work at them together and come up with solutions that will allow us to deal with this. Long before Katrina, there was efforts to have coastal Louisiana restoration activity. Long before Katrina, we built the in 1990 the Carnarvon diversion structure, was just what Mead's talking about, opening the levees so that water can go through during certain periods of the year to replenish the wetlands with nutrients and sediment.
Okay. Let's bring our callers into this, and I'll remind everybody that our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And let's go to Jordan in another city on the Mississippi, St. Louis.
Yeah, hi, everybody.
Hi.
So, we've already done hurricanes. We've done it. It was impressive. But St. Louis knows very well about the New Madrid Fault. The next threat to New Orleans is the one that they experienced 200 years ago, which put the S Bend in the river down there, the great earthquake that shook up New Orleans once before. We'll do it again. And so I think the solution was voiced very well by Bill Maher, who said we should move New Orleans to Kansas.
Huh.
Kansas would get the stick removed, and New Orleans would be safe again.
I refuse to take your premise, but interesting nonetheless. Well, hold on. Let's see if we can get some thoughts on that. I'm a little at loss. Is this your area, Mead Allison? Can you speak to
well,
that?
Well, let me go a little bit tangentially and say that it is certainly important to recognize that that in, you know, that right now Katrina is the 900-pound gorilla out there, but at the same time, much of the engineering that was created in South Louisiana and on up the Mississippi River channel to St. Louis has been designed to handle major floods. And I assume that, although I'm not an earthquake expert, that there would be some effect on Mississippi River flow by that type of event. So I think it's important that we recognize that whatever design that we arrive at that enhances our protection for South Louisiana from hurricanes, we still have to recognize that the entire corridor is vulnerable to a major flood, and that we need to keep that in mind as we design in the future.
But I wonder if I could turn to Jerry Galloway. I mean, do the Corps or do people think about, you know, think about earthquakes, for example?
Oh, certainly. You may recall it was probably 10 years ago somebody predicted that the great earthquake would occur in December of that year along the New Madrid Fault. And people worried that if the water were high during that period and you had some sort of a seismic activity, you could have problems with the levees. Fortunately, levees tend to be, the size of the levees we have on the Mississippi tend to be somewhat resilient in the case of earthquake, but again, it would depend on the size. But the interesting challenge is the city of Sacramento faces that very threat every year with the seismic activity in California and in being surrounded by levees.
Huh.
So it's not just a New Orleans issue how you deal with these multiple hazards.
Okay, Jordan, thanks very much for that call. Let's go to Todd in Phoenix, Arizona. Todd, welcome to Science Friday.
Thank you. My question is, I'm wondering why nobody suggested turning it into something similar to Venice in Italy, and if they did, would the buildings have the same susceptibility to sinking?
Donald Bosch, are you familiar enough with Venice to compare Venice and New Orleans?
I'm with both New Orleans and Venice.
Okay.
This is, in fact, there have been people to suggest that. I think not very well-informed people, but that's been suggested. Let me see if I can take a crack at it. But first, let me just, with the previous caller, I'm not aware of any catastrophic earthquake that affected New Orleans. You know, diseases, fires, river floods, of course, were part of its history. And most every place we live has some threats.
And it's important also to keep in mind that the reason New Orleans flooded the way it did and held its water is not because the levees were overtop, but because they actually structurally failed. This is a human problem that we can engineering problem that we should be trying to fix. And storm surges from hurricanes can overtop levees, but only for a very short period of time. Levees, when they're breached, of course, cause massive problems, and that's what we need to deal with. But let me just talk about the Venice situation. There is serious consideration in some of the low-lying areas of New Orleans of what to do, whether they should be redeveloped or whether they should be some sort of open space, wetlands, lakes, that sort of thing. And I think this is yet to be played out. There's a lot of social concerns and so on about this. I think it's probably likely that one of the outcomes is that there will be areas, the Urban Land Institute, for example, recommended that there be open green space, which might be buffered for not only for hurricane flooding that might occur on occasion, but also from heavy rainfall and the like, and so that some of these low-lying areas wouldn't be rebuilt. They would be put into that purpose. The likelihood that people will inhabit that by living on stilts or in traveling around from their to their homes and businesses by boats and gondolas, I think, is pretty unlikely, and I think it's probably consistent with what the American lifestyle is interested in. However, there's very likely to be, I think, requirements that will be put in place by flood insurance restrictions that houses, as they rebuild, have to be elevated so that if there is a modest flood with safer levees, it's always a possibility. They will not do the permanent damage to homes and structures that we saw in this storm.
Todd, thanks.
I think moving up rather than flooding areas and having people living in those flooding areas is the likely.
And Venice is going through some real problems in trying to maintain what it has already, and it's going to take some major infrastructure to keep it alive.
Right.
That's right.
Right. Interesting.
Well, that was part of my question is, would they be susceptible to sinking if it were built as a Venice?
Interesting. Donald Bosch, what
yeah,
about
I
that?
Yeah, I think the Mead talked earlier that there are parts of the city within the city limits that are as much as 12 feet below sea level. The principal reason that that's so, I mean, those houses weren't built below sea level when they were land was developed and they were built. The principal reason is that the land is sunk, and it's sunk primarily, even though there's regional sinking of the Delta area, it's sunk primarily because they was built on swamps, and those highly organic, wet soils lost their volume because of the decomposition of organic matter, the lowering of the water table, so that if we could have some of these low-lying areas converted to areas that are, you know, that we would be allowed to flood periodically and put into not occupied, this could allow us to adjust the water table upward in the city and would could reduce the rate of future sinking of land within the city.
See, but here's what I'm thinking now. You talk in a lot of these reports about bringing the stakeholders in to have these discussions, but I'm betting you didn't have any gondoliers on your committee to give you that perspective. So.
Well, I would say that I have read that City Park in New Orleans has a official gondolier with a gondola that was built by a man in North Carolina who actually went to Venice to learn his trade. So, in fact, we do have a local expertise here.
Well, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there's the stakeholder population there represented. But I wonder if I could turn to you, Jerry Galloway, for something that Donald Bosch just said in terms of, you know, that the levees broke, but that's a human problem, and we have to figure out how to fix that. It seems to me that in almost every disaster where something happens and something breaks, they say, we realize the problem, but now we know how to make it better. And then, you know, sometimes it doesn't happen again for 10 or 20 years, but then it breaks again, and then we say, oh, well, we realize the problem now that we thought we realized 20 years ago, but now we really realize it, and we're going to make it better. I mean, can you really design the perfect levee?
I think what you do is do your very best after every engineering problem to deal with it. The challenge we face is in New Orleans is illustrative of so many other places in the country, and it's dealing with an infrastructure that needs to be maintained, that needs to be monitored. We still don't know why the levees failed, the flood walls failed on the canals. We've got some good ideas. There are forensic teams trying to identify that. When they find that out, and hopefully they'll have that information shortly, that will be built into the reconstruction of the existing levees. And as you know, the next step, the people in New Orleans are clamoring for the president has said, stronger and better levees. They'll go to perhaps some combination of levees and the work in the restoration to rebuild New Orleans to protect against a larger hurricane. That should take into account the failures that were identified in Katrina. My experience with engineering has been, yes, we can solve that particular problem. The next problem will probably be a different problem. And it's one that says you need constant monitoring, you need to know and understand what you're dealing with, and you need to make sure you're maintaining and upgrading as necessary. And that wasn't always done in the New Orleans area.
Okay, we're talking with Meade Allison, Donald Bosch, and Jerry Galloway, three scientists and engineers definitely interested in the question of rebuilding New Orleans. I need to remind people that this is Talk of the Nation. I'm Joe Palca, and this is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's go to the phones again, and we have a call from a man, I assume it's a man, named P-Boy in Jacksonville, Florida. P-Boy, welcome to the program.
Oh, hey, Cat. How you all doing today?
Good.
Well, I haven't been displaced out of New Orleans, and I got out early and took the family and went to the daughter's house in Jacksonville, and we've been here ever since. And the biggest problem, and every one of you gentlemen there has picked it out, is the fact that they didn't watch over the levees, they didn't look them, they didn't take care of them like they're supposed to. We suspect that they didn't build them right in the first place, and but New Orleans being such an immoral town, that's a problem that we have to deal with. But I have a sneaking suspicion if they went to rebuild them wetlands and let that water go down out of Southwest Pass and go across there and rebuild that, so when the hurricane come up, you ain't got that, that'll be fine. But I also know the fact that they aren't going to rebuild my house. I mean, it's completely gone, and the area it's in, you know, I want to go back, but that area don't need to be built in no more. And there's some people that are just going to have to give it up. And I know it's real hard, but the areas they shouldn't rebuild in, and they're going to be poor areas, some like the Ninth Ward, but they're going to be areas in Lakefront, along Paris Avenue, the London Canal, and all of that. So I don't see a lot of people coming back, but I see a chance finally to do something right.
Well, what do you think about that, Jerry Galloway? Do you accept P-Boy's criticism that they weren't built properly and that there's no way to protect certain areas?
I think there are ways to protect certain areas, but I think Don has already brought up the issue of there are some areas that would be better off if they were placed into wetlands, if that appears to be the solution the people on the ground want. The other thing that they've had a problem with, the walls that were built along the canal were built as flood walls and not as levees because people didn't want to take the real estate necessary to build a levee there. What we have now is the opportunity with the houses destroyed, if you're going to provide that protection, to provide strong protection, to do it the right way, provide adequate right-of-way for what's being done. Were they built the right way the first time? I think certainly the people that did it thought they were built the right way. Did they make adjustments to compensate for the fact that there was a narrow right-of-way? Certainly. And I think that's the sort of thing you want to avoid when you go back in there this time.
Well, I don't know if I agree with them being built right the first time for being working down there for so many years. But well, not in my backyard attitude.
Well, yeah.
It's the biggest problem right there.
Yeah, it's
you're
possible.
Absolutely right, and I think we'll know this. You know there is an investigation going on, a combination of the American Society of Civil Engineers, the Corps of Engineers, academics, people from the business world, and that it's all being overseen by the National Research Council, National Academies, looking at this, and I think you're going to get an honest appraisal within the next 60 to 120 days of exactly what went wrong, and I've been seeing in the press time and time again that they're going to tell it like it is, and I think that'll mean a lot to you who have lived there.
P-Boy, thanks a lot for the call. Jerry Galloway, I just wonder if I could – I didn't realize that there's an issue in terms of – I mean, in terms of right-of-way. How much space do you need to build a levee? I mean, was the problem, again, that real estate interests were pushing up against the banks of the river or the banks of the canals?
It's along the canals. People have their homes there. If you go back and you walk along the canals, you see that the homes were very close. When you decide that you're going to raise the elevation of a levee – there's certainly the height, in this case, a flood wall went up 6, 8, 10 feet, and instead of having a levee that for every foot that goes up, you may need 6 feet in the lateral dimension. And because you were right at the edge of the canal when they built those, you couldn't expand into the canal. You would have had to set back the levee, move it back, which would have caused the displacement of a number of homes. That's the not-in-my-backyard syndrome that he just referred to.
Right. Well, Jerry Galloway, we're going to have to take a short break. We're talking about the rebuilding of New Orleans. Stay with us. From NPR News, this is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Joe Palca. We're talking this hour about rebuilding New Orleans. My guests are Jerry Galloway, the Glenn L. Martin Institute Professor of Engineering at the University of Maryland in College Park, Mead Allison, Associate Professor in the Department of Earth and Environmental Sciences at Tulane University in New Orleans, and Donald Bosch, Professor of Marine Science at the University of Maryland and President of the University of Maryland Center for Environmental Science in Cambridge, Maryland. And I wonder, Mead Allison, if I can just ask you, as someone who's in New Orleans now and has thought about this a lot, I mean, from a scientific standpoint, never mind political, socioeconomic, what have you, from a scientific standpoint, as best as you can tell, are there areas of New Orleans that people just shouldn't think about rebuilding?
Well, I don't think it is possible to disentangle the scientific side from the economic and the social aspects, but certainly it's more difficult to protect people in lower elevations than it is to protect people that are closer to sea level or in some cases above sea level in the city of New Orleans. I did want to sort of expand on something that Don said earlier about this idea that there has been significant subsidence in part of the city. Or in the city of New Orleans, but actually metropolitan New Orleans has experienced a great deal of subsidence due to water withdrawal that's a function of the pumping of the city to maintain basically dry land, that even in the absence of a storm, if you turn off the pumps, the city fills up with water, albeit a bit more slowly. And so it's evidence of this ongoing subsidence that, in fact, is functions to lower the elevation of levees. I mean, some of these levees have been in place for decades, and clearly we're beginning to find out that their elevations were not what we thought they were. And, of course, it also makes much more difficult the engineering problem of building a stable substrate for these levees.
Yeah, Donald Bosch, maybe I could get you to explain, why the city is subsiding or sinking.
Well, there are a number of reasons. First of all, just in terms of the deeper geology, the Mississippi River has been depositing sediments out in that region for a very long time, and so the mass of the weight of those sediments have kind of down warped the underlying rocks in the geology. That's a slow and steady process, and it's a fairly small amount of sinking of the land. The others, of course, are things that we do. Humans in the more recent period of time have done, including the drainage of wetland soils, which, as through the process that Mead described, caused fairly rapid sinking. Now, in New Orleans, most of that happened in the early part of the 20th century. The expansion out from this historic footprint that Mead described as the dry land into the wetland areas as the city and the population grew, the demand for a suburban lifestyle and the like. And so those areas sank that 8 to 10 to 12 feet fairly rapidly over just tens of years. And the rate of continued sinking in the future is probably likely going to be a lot slower than it has than in that past period. But it's still sinking, and so we do need to think about how we can manage drainage and the water table to slow that process down. Other causes are when we load onto this soil, this river sediment, a road or a levee, it causes sinking. And the other thing that's a problem, and it's not a problem in New Orleans per se, but in the wetlands, is now there's an emerging evidence that oil and gas withdrawals, the deposits of oil and gas and the other salt water and so on included in those deposits, the pumping out of that took place during the middle part of the 20th century, middle of the late part of the 20th century, caused a sinking of the land, which isn't a problem with respect to human flooding, but it's a major problem that causes a wetland loss.
I'd like to invite another caller onto the discussion. Let's go to Ken in Greenville, North Carolina. Ken, welcome to Science Friday.
Hi. I was just wondering if you had an estimate of how much it would cost to restore the coastal wetlands or to build a levee that would withstand a Category 5 hurricane.
Jerry Galloway, is
well,
that something you've crossed
out? Well, I think you have to look at those two together. This very fine report that Don Bosch has just led, and I'd urge any of the listeners to go to http://umces.edu, talks about that in some length. The estimate started off that coastal Louisiana restoration was going to be $14 to $20 billion, changing from a Category 3 to a Category 5 hurricane protection would be $2.5 billion, but that was before Katrina. So we're not talking about small change. We're talking about billions of dollars and something that can't be done overnight but needs to be started tomorrow.
And Donald Bosch, I wonder if I can come back to you about that. People talk about restoring the wetlands. Is that really possible, or once they're gone, they're gone?
Well, yeah, we don't use the word restore in the sense that you're going to recreate them exactly where they were. What we're talking about is restoring the processes by which the wetlands sustain themselves over time, allowing the river to flow back out into the surrounding areas rather than out to the deep Gulf of Mexico, as Mead described. Managing the legacy of our canals and so on, which have caused and continue to cause problems, such that it allows the continuance of wetlands into the future, taking where there are opportunities of river diversions and creating new wetlands. So it's a combination of kind of increasing the longevity of the existing wetlands and, where possible, extending out to new wetlands rather than creating a map that looks like one, 50 years ago.
Okay. Ken, thanks very much for that call.
Do you have that website again?
You know what? I think it'd be, if you go to sciencefriday.com,
it's on there?
It's probably on. If it's not on there now, it will be soon. So
all right.
Check
Thank
there.
You
it's
very
probably
much.
Easier. All right. Let's go to another call and try Kelly. Kelly in Des Moines, Iowa. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you very much. My question is concerning the levees and their maintenance.
Okay.
And the first part of that question is, who was responsible for the maintenance of the levees before Katrina hit? And the second part of the question is, when the levees are rebuilt and federal funds are going to rebuild those, will it be the state's responsibility to maintain those then, or will it become the federal government's responsibility?
Jerry Galloway, is that something you're
comfortable with? Typically, in New Orleans, the responsibility rests with what are called levee boards to do the routine maintenance of the levees on the Mississippi and on Lake Pontchartrain. When a federal project is built, there is a local sponsor that signs up to take care of the local expenses, and then once the project is completed, take care of the maintenance and upgrades as necessary. It's a little bit different on the Mississippi River in New Orleans because there's a unique responsibility of the federal government to do major maintenance. But if the federal government comes in, as they are, restoring the levees to their previous condition, and if they were to upgrade them, the local sponsor, under the current laws, would be responsible for the continuing maintenance. Now, the state of Louisiana, and Mead can probably talk to this better, but the state of Louisiana is closely examining the organization they have for this operation, locally constituted levee boards, consolidated levee boards, trying to bring more order or control over what goes on by these levee boards and the carrying out of their responsibilities.
Mead, do you have something to add to that, Mead Allison?
Yeah, only that I would agree that with Jerry that, in fact, in the city, in the metropolitan area, there are seven different levee boards, and there's certainly a major effort in the state and bills before the state legislature to consider a consolidation of those levee boards to streamline this process.
And Mead Allison, I wonder if I can just follow up on Kelly's question, which is, what does it mean exactly to maintain a levee? I mean, what do you have to do, or does it depend on the kind of levee you're talking about?
It's maintaining both the character. Jerry may be able to speak more to this than I would, but I would assume that in the case of an earthen levee, you have to make sure the continued strength and soil testing to observe that, and then the integrity of flood walls as well. And then, as I said before, I think in a continually subsiding environment, the elevation of those levees and maintaining a close watch on that elevation is also critical.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Mead. It's a matter of watching what's going on, identifying small changes that might lead to larger changes, taking care of the day-to-day maintenance, taking trees out, making sure there's not encroachment in the levee, that people aren't building into the levee, that they are ready to take on the next challenge. And in New Orleans, that additional challenge is they're in continual subsidence, so somebody has to make sure they're at the right elevation.
Right.
And that's a nationwide challenge right now. We've got a lot of levees. We don't even know where all the levees are in the nation, much less their condition. And there are several bills pending in the Congress to ask the federal government to go out and find these and to find out what their condition is and to report back on that.
Okay, Kelly, thanks very much for that call. You know, I've just been thinking that we've talked about levees as a protection from water, and we've talked about pumps as a way of protecting a city that's, as you say, under sea level, and we've talked about wetlands. Are those the three major things, or have we left something out? Maybe Jerry Galloway, in terms of protection.
Well, there's another aspect, and I'd like Don to comment on this, too, is that many people look at the pictures of the Thames River or the Netherlands and see these massive gates that seem to provide some sort of total protection for a city. There are other methods of dealing with hurricanes, and all of these need to be taken into account, but I wouldn't expect to see the same types of protections you see on the North Sea coast in the Netherlands in New Orleans, although some people would speak to that. There may be places where you want to put surge gates to keep the storm, the hurricane surge, from getting into Lake Pontchartrain, but I don't think you'd see the same sort of thing that you see in the Netherlands. So it's really wetlands, it's levees, it's interior drainage, and other structures as needed, but they're not the first line.
Donald Bosch, maybe you can explain what kind of approaches they've tried in the Netherlands, because they're also facing the problem of being under sea level.
That's right. And the situation in Netherlands is a bit different, though. And in our report, we urge that we learn from how the Dutch have approached their flood protection problems, because they have not only a very energetic ocean nearby, the North Sea, but they also have a big river which is flood prone, the Rhine system coming through the country. They have a very massive dike system at the coastal margin and then surrounding all the areas and waterways, but also some barriers that can be that allow tidal flow in and out, but can be closed off when there are major storm risks. The problem in Louisiana is that if you did that along the whole coast, first of all, the coast is a lot bigger than the Netherlands, and it would be very extremely costly. And of course, in Holland, it's a matter of national priority because most of their population lives in this low-lying area. It's a question of whether that would be appropriate or would be acceptable in the United States. But more importantly, from a scientific perspective, if one built those kinds of more or less continuous, very large, massive levee system, even if it did have some floodgates, it would affect the what we did with the river water, which is needed to restore the wetlands. It would also affect the tidal flow in and out of the coastal areas, which is very important in allowing those wetlands to continue to grow upward as they sink, if you will, due to both subsidence as well as sea level rise. So we need to make sure that whatever we do in these protection systems, we allow a sustainable, self-sustaining coastal landscape to exist in consort with these levees and floodgates.
Can I add something to your original question?
Well, one moment. I just want to remind people that we're talking about rebuilding New Orleans and that I'm Joe Palca, and this is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Meet Allison, was that that was you?
Yes.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, your original question was, are there any other aspects that we haven't considered that come into this protection strategy? And I think it should be pointed out that the barrier islands that exist off coastal Louisiana are another very important natural aspect. They provide, if you will, the speed bump to the storm surge and also help to dampen wave energy. And it hasn't been brought up that much thus far, but when levees are attacked, they're not simply attacked by the storm surge, but it's also the waves on top of the storm surge that have an effect. So anything you can do to dampen wave energy is also a potential protection strategy.
And as you go back to talking about
Jerry Galloway, sorry, go ahead.
Your original question, the issue of what you do in the city of New Orleans is going to be important. New Orleans is one of the few places in the country where people who live inside a levee are required to have flood insurance in a good part of the city. And that's because, as has been mentioned several times, if you have a tremendous rainstorm in New Orleans, all that water is already in the ground. It ends up filling every ditch, every nook and cranny, and they end up having to pump it out, and they can't pump it out sometimes as fast. And so there is an interior floodplain created by the problems with pumping in New Orleans. And so one of the solutions in the long run is to examine exactly where people should be and at what elevation they should rebuild, and this can't be neglected.
Well, we've only got a couple minutes left, and I want to get each of your thoughts very quickly on how well the science of doing this job is understood, as we were saying earlier, to present a question of what to do to policymakers, and then, of course, all the different issues have to come into play, what they actually do, and money is one of them. But very briefly, Jerry Galloway, how well do you think we understand the science here?
I think we are learning a great deal. I think we're sharing this science, and what we're doing that's the most important, in my view, is integrating the views of the different aspects of science and the different approaches to solving this problem. So it's not just done in eaches, it's done in an integrated whole.
Okay, thanks. Donald Bush.
I think we know an awful lot about this system in terms of how it was created geologically, what sustains it, and I think we know enough to take some action. I think we know what we need to do with respect to restoring river flow into the system, and I think it's time that we begin doing it. And as we do that, we can watch it and learn very, very accurately and adapt our strategies into the future. But it's time for action, not time for a long episode of more scientific studies and research.
Okay, Mead Allison, you get the last word.
Well, I think I agree with both of them. I would only add that one of the things as a Louisiana scientist that's been very encouraging is that an issue that has been studied heavily for decades within Louisiana now has attracted a great deal of scientific interest and scientific talent from outside the state and, in fact, worldwide, and I think that's going to be ultimately tremendously beneficial to the overall scientific side of this issue.
Okay, that's where we have to leave things. I'd like to thank my guest this hour, Mead Allison, is an associate professor in the Department of Earth and Environmental Sciences at Tulane University in New Orleans, Louisiana. Donald Bosch is a professor of marine science at the University of Maryland and president of the University of Maryland Center for Environmental Science in Cambridge, Maryland. And Jerry Galloway, the Glenn L. Martin Institute Professor of Engineering at the University of Maryland in College Park. Thanks very much to all of you.
Good to be with you, Joe.
Kimberly, you're welcome. Thanks for coming. Kimberly Jones is our technical director. Our audio engineers are Michael Cullen and Arjun Hutchins. Greg Smith composed our theme music. We had help today from NPR librarians Key Molesky and Alphonse Vinn. If you have comments or questions, write to us at Science Friday, 55 West 45th Street, 4th floor, New York, New York, 10036. And there's an email address. It's scifry@npr.org. For NPR News in Washington, I'm Joe Palca.